Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today's interview is going to be with Joe Patrica. At the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2017, Joe's short film, A Meditation, won the Audience Award. And it was no surprise because it's just a really well-made film. The writing is excellent, the directing is excellent, the art direction is excellent, and the acting is out of this world excellent. So A Meditation is a fantastic short that if you go to discoverindiefilm.com and find this podcast, there is a link to the Vimeo feed for it. And as always, I highly recommend you watch the film and then listen to this interview with the filmmaker. Then you get to recreate the really enjoyable film festival feeling of watching the film and then getting to know the filmmaker and how they got their film made. Joe has a fascinating story. I find it completely interesting from start to finish. So instead of saying more setup, let's just hear Joe.
You know, been a filmmaker basically my entire life. Mm-hmm. Maybe not so active in the filmmaking part in the last 15 years. But from high school in Buffalo, New York, where there were no film classes in the 80s, except for the University of Buffalo had a really great experimental film department. All these kind of great experimental filmmakers from New York City moved to Buffalo because they could afford it and worked at the university there.
Right, because they were too avant-garde for Manhattan.
Right, and yeah, they couldn't support themselves to do that. And while I didn't really like experimental film when you're 16 or 17 kind of is a stretch or a reach, there would be like flashes of cool things that kept me endeared to which I really appreciate now. It was a great foundation not to have something traditional, to have something more fine arty and theoretical and thought based as opposed to story based.
Right. And you grew up like a fan of cinema?
More mainstream, like, you know, movie. There were art house cinemas back then. And I remember living in those and all. They was like, it was sort of just as video was becoming ubiquitous.
Yeah. All of a sudden, every weekend you could go to just scan the spines of the VHS tapes.
Exactly. So then I studied film undergrad, spent a year at the Art Institute of Chicago. The experimental film path took me there. And after a year, I just realized I want to make more mainstream films. And this fine art thing is great, but not what I want to stay in.
But you started at Buffalo University?
When I was in high school.
High school. So you had access to that department.
Exactly.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, so that was great. So I was like this little kid.
And were you making stuff with camcorders?
Yeah. I was making stuff with Super 8 cameras.
Super 8, exactly.
Yeah, and camcorders, but mostly Super 8. And I made a couple films that won awards and did things, which was surprising for a, you know, kid at the time.
Yeah. And that was back when you had to mail a print.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, people don't realize how hard it was.
No, it was really labor-intensive to get it all together at the time. And then I went to NYU. I transferred from the Chicago Art Institute to NYU and studied film there. Mm-hmm. And got my undergraduate there and made films.
Directing emphasis?
It was a general production program, so you didn't necessarily have to.
Yeah, I guess it's the recent graduates who come in here and talk to me about, you know, I was one of the few people that got to do the directing program and the, you know.
Yeah, and it wasn't like
camera.
That. Like, I kind of focused on screenwriting and directing, but, you know, it wasn't a track kind of thing.
Right.
And graduated and produced music videos for RCA Records for like a year. It was like a kind of scholarship thing related to school, which was great because as a white boy from Buffalo, where would you assign me in 1987? The hardcore rap label.
Of course, that was what was coming up.
Of course, that's what you did because that's what no money was. They weren't putting any money towards it.
Right.
So they put young film students on making these videos, which was great. I mean, it was crazy. And
you were producing.
Yeah, and I was producing.
So you didn't, like, have to wear multiple hats and direct,
no,
too?
No. We had, like, a little team who kind of did a little bit of everything.
That must have been really wild.
Yeah, it was. But it was, like, no money. And, it, you know, after a while, you couldn't really...
Hard to believe that rap... Yeah, I guess... Yeah.
I know.
Hard to believe that they were underfunded, just
right.
treated... they were ghettoized.
Yeah, totally.
As a genre.
Yeah. And so it was hard to make the leap then to, because film in New York wasn't film in New York today. It was still very burgeoning, very a little independent, but not like it is.
Sure, sure. Because there was Jim Jarmusch. And,
right.
And
there was like that scene.
There was like a little scene forming, but it wasn't.
And New Line was kind of like the
Tribeca didn't exist. There was none of that.
Yeah. So I took a job in advertising thinking, oh, it's visual. It's got to be related. Yeah, it's not related at all.
Well, I'm just curious because I've heard that before. Is it because pleasing a client makes you completely non-creative, or what makes it so different from film? Because in theory, advertising, they are short films, right?
Sure. And I think today there is like a branded content and advertising that is more director vision specific than where I was. Right.
And that's
totally
probably just like Christopher Guest and a few others, right?
Right,
Everyone else is just making soap.
Right. I mean, so it was just not, there was no creative input.
Right.
But it paid the rent and was great for a couple of years. And then I decided to come out to L.A. To go to grad school.
Mm-hmm.
Went to AFI, studied screenwriting. Did well, you know, won some big award that got me some attention. Wrote and did get paid for a couple of years. And worked as an art director. And and just crew experience. Kind of from the advertising world, I had this sort of ability visually to do stuff.
Right.
So I worked as an art director on everything from commercials to music videos to TV movies to independent films, which was great. It was just great working with filmmakers and getting the lay of the land and
staying involved while you're writing. Because screenwriting, you can become isolated at home and lose
very
touch
much
with
so.
Everything.
And then there was a job at AFI editing an experimental film journal. So they asked if I would edit the experimental film journal because I had the experimental film background, which was great because it
going
totally
back to Chicago and
in Buffalo. So that was kind of great. And I think someone that I studied with was being honored as an experimental filmmaker by AFI that year. So there was also that connection that I knew Hollis Frampton, and it was a way to go.
Right. And AFI sort of was a bit of a community of people who
And it was a little more film, I don't know what to call it. A little more like Sundance than like USC. Whereas today it might be a little more USC than Sundance.
By necessity,
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So I edited that film journal, which was like a 4-month or 6-month gig. Went back to freelance work. And AFI called and said, there was a TV writing workshop and we need someone to help coordinate it. And I took that and slowly one job led to another to 25 years of executive vice dean.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, I wrote for Turner Classic Movies. I wrote Robert Osborne's intros and outros for about 3 years with a team of other writers.
Sure.
But, you know,
that's cool.
It was great. It was
right.
Really
so you were
great.
On staff in a way?
Yeah. And, you know, just old movies and writing about movies was kind of a great thing and shocked me. But Turner Classic Movies sent you all the research and all you had to do was condense it.
Right.
So
right.
I didn't have to do the research on, you know, an old Cary Grant movie. They gave it to me.
Right. You were just writing these scripts for them.
So that was kind of a great experience. And then I just started writing scripts mostly for directors that eventually never got made.
Right. But people would come to you
and people
say,
would pay me and, you know, it was enough to sort of feel like my foot was in the door and things were going
on. So you're
on.
Working full-time in academia at a film institute.
Right.
Not regular academia.
Yeah.
And then pretty much writing on the side.
Yeah. And doing mostly writing on the side professionally and I would do like producing favors for filmmaker friends. You know, I'd clear this music.
If you like
I'd help
somebody.
I'd help find a
they
location.
They could get you if you like them.
Exactly. So, and I never really got much credit. I got thank yous on all of these films.
Right.
But it was also just great.
But you were
to,
lending a helping hand, so it wasn't like you were getting producer credits.
Right, exactly.
Or,
right, yeah.
Yeah.
But which was fine, which I wasn't looking for. And it was a way to be involved without having to quit and do something for 3 months that you couldn't do anything else while you were doing.
Right.
And a meditation started out as a feature script.
Mm-hmm.
Having been a writer for a long time, I had a bit of a reputation. And I was meeting with this director for lunch. And she kept saying, like, what do you have? What's going on? What scripts do you have? What's coming up? She liked nothing that I was working on. no.
That you were
no,
developing
next,
yourself?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
No, next. No, what else? What else? And she's like...
So you're always writing your own things off the side. You'd have an idea and you'd actually spend time into it.
Right.
Which and a lot of people don't. They have ideas and then they just...
Right. But it was, and some of them worked and some didn't work. But, you know, it's nice to have a shelf full of scripts at this point and kind of know...
Anybody who thinks everything on the shelf is good is delusional.
Yeah. so she said, something else is going on. You seem very upbeat. What's going on? And this weird thing kind of happened recently where I had this incident where I was selling stuff. I had just moved into my house. And I'd been there maybe 5 years. But I obviously was selling stuff to make room for things or something like that. And I met this woman who I had this brief affair with. And it was just interesting in that. She never asked my name. She never asked what I did. And yet it was probably 10 months, a year. And it was just strange. And
it's
it was
fascinating.
Just like, what's going on? And what do we want from each other? And it was kind of like we didn't want anything other than that hour or two we would spend together and nothing else.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it was just kind of crazy. And I would think, like, okay, I'm not going to bother with her. And then she texts me, or vice versa. And so it just happened. So I tell this director that story, and she's like, that's what you should write. So I wrote a draft of it and kept it very close to the reality of what had happened. And then as drafts went on, new characters came about and new plot points came about. And she was attached to direct it as a feature. For about a year and a half. And we had some interest from some really good actors, which gave us hope that, okay, this is going to get made when, you know, someone, you know,
of
name
value.
As
an independent?
As an independent.
Mm-hmm.
And she had directed, you know, 5 or 6 features already, but had really kind of the independent world without having the, you know, shiny name of you know someone
there's the indie stars and then there's super talented people and we don't know why they're not
and they just work
a Soloway
and they just work constantly all over the world and she's international so she's made films as well in 5 different countries so that didn't happen and I thought well after a year and a half she moved on to do something else. And we sort of just said, okay. And then another director friend of mine, I had met him at a Thanksgiving dinner, someone I went to graduate school with, who was working in London. He had directed a couple features, and was doing a lot of high level advertising work. Mm-hmm. And he's like, looking for a feature, looking for something to do. What do you got? And I'm like, oh, well, this script just became available. Here, read it. Never heard from him. Again, you know, it's that kind of thing where you give the script and you're like, oh, is that going to be him? No.
That is such, the modern day comparison is like you've text a picture to someone you're interested in and they don't respond.
Right, exactly.
You're like, I'm naked now. Why can't you give me something back?
Yeah
it's very, very exposing.
Yeah. Then almost a year later, like October of the following year of after Thanksgiving, he calls saying, oh, I'm so sorry for not following up. We love the script. I've got these actors attached. We're going to move forward. And I'm just like,
he was doing things without talking to you?
Yeah.
The sole owner of it?
He just thought we were friends and it was going to be okay.
Very odd.
Which was odd, but we were friends.
Sure.
And what the hell.
Well, it's not like it's bad news to hear that there's people attached to your script.
Exactly. So he had Hill Harper attached as the lead actor, which was a little, you know, up until that point, we were casting Caucasian actors or actors who sort of seemed like a good-looking version of what the script originated as.
Sure.
And bringing Hill into it sort of opened doors to the politics of it all and took away a lot of the similarity to life thing and seemed to create a great thing. And so we did this staged reading here in L.A., and a friend of a friend is Harold Perrineau, and we cast him as the best friend of the lead character. Mm-hmm. And we had a great cast for the rest of it, and the reading went really, really well. And afterwards, it was like, to me, I would have cast Harold as the lead. But Hill was great, and Hill did a great job, but it was just a different character or a different dynamic, and Hill was very attached to that director, which was fine. It was all great. But then eventually, didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
The funding, we got a budget that I was happy with, but the director wasn't happy with. Mm-hmm. And so it didn't happen. And people started telling me, mentors and people that I was close to, like, what are you doing partnering with these people? Why don't you make it? Because you're qualified enough. I mean, why don't you make it?
That obviously was my question, is when did you decide to direct
it? And a producing friend, the woman who produced the film, she all along has just been like, why aren't you directing this? And it was just like, I'm busy, I'm working, I don't have the money to do it. I mean, like, every bullshit excuse.
But you directed as a feature.
As a feature. Yeah, so yeah, I also said,
that's
like,
a huge commitment for someone with a career.
And I haven't directed anything in about 12 years at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, who's going to hire me to direct something when, sure, I got some films from the 90s, but what have you been doing lately?
So you skipped that, though. So you were making features or shorts in the 90s?
Yeah, shorts. Yeah, just little,
but written and directed by you.
Yeah, yes.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. So then I figured, okay, let's take a scene from it and make it as sort of a proof of concept short for a feature that we could go out and find financing for. And, you know, put together a really great team and really had some very specific goals as far as how I wanted the set to run and what I wanted the experience to be for everyone, just because I had been on a lot of sets. And there's good sets and there's bad sets, and I don't ever want to be part of a bad set.
Right.
And sometimes so you
were approaching this as a more mature filmmaker, 12 years.
Exactly.
And you were like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right.
Exactly. Even though you have to, you know, I had, you know, my own personal rules, like, I'll never shoot in my own house. Oh, it comes down to you could save $3,000 if you shoot at your own house.
Is that your home?
Yeah.
Oh.
So we shot at my house.
Sure.
And
you had a good commute.
Yeah, exactly. And also, the experience at AFI, sort of overseeing production in a way, in the first year of the AFI program, everyone makes a 15 to 20 minute short film three times during a year, and we give them the budget of $4,000, maybe it's $4,300, something like that. And they make these short films. They don't have to worry about clearance or anything, but they make these films, and they're really accomplished, great, exciting films, and sometimes they go on to make their thesis film, which is a much longer, much more expensive film, and that energy is gone. So I kind of wanted to use that model of, you know what, we're going to shoot it in 3 days, we capped the budget at like $8,000, not $4,000, and let's just do it this way.
And did you select, when you went from the feature script to the short script, did you just say, I'm going to do the first 15 pages? Or did you pre-select like a way to introduce the concept?
I just kind of figured that though the script has other characters and other action, the crux of it all is this affair, for lack of a better word, between this man and this woman who comes to buy a DVR. So it seemed, I had done a draft of a short script that was a little like the best of the feature, a little bit of scenes from all over, and everyone just felt like, well, that's a trailer. That's not a short film that can stand on its own. And then when I looked at the scene of them just meeting, I had to pare a few things out, but it was pretty much, kind of could just be that.
Right. And their first meeting isn't necessarily the very beginning of the feature.
Correct.
You just pulled their first meeting because that really is the crux.
Right.
Good choice.
So, and then, you know, approached Harold Perrineau to be the lead, and since he had a positive experience at the table read maybe a year and a half before, he was completely open to it and was really great and really supportive and
that's fantastic.
Really into it, which was great. Really great.
Says a lot about him as a person. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's a really great guy. So that was really great. And then casting the female role was a little tricky. We had cast an actress who was on a Fox series. And a week out, her agents pulled her, uncomfortable with the nudity and the drugs and things like that. And we had to hustle a little bit. But we had done a casting, and so we had a few choices. And we approached Samantha, and she really got the script and really understood it. But it was interesting because she was relatively a recent graduate, actually, of NYU's drama program, mm-hmm. and had, you know, some experience out here acting, but not a tremendous amount. And Harold, you know, has been in everything for the last 12 years. So it was great to have this really experienced person and this really inexperienced person, and both brought so much of that to the table.
Yeah, very much. I mean, when you watch the film, I'm cognizant in a way. When you watch it, you're like, she's holding her own.
Yeah.
Like, there's a feeling of, you know, and she's entering his space
right
within your film, and, you know, she's actually entering the acting space with this pro. It's yeah, that dynamic works very well.
Yeah, it worked really well. And so it was a great shoot. We got everything we needed in 3 days, and that was great. Editing took about 5 months, mostly because I was, you know, and also you're getting freebies on sound mixes and color timing and things like that.
That's one of the beautiful things about making shorts. And I think it's another reason why when people make shorts that I see at the festival level, they're often more rewarding than features, is because you make that short and, you know, there's no one yelling at you right. to get it completed on a yeah. certain time. Whereas when you make a feature and you raise funds, it's sort of a race.
Yeah. It can be frustrating because, you know, people, I think, hear these stories of, oh, you get a free sound mix or you get a free. And it may not be 100% free. Yeah. It may be that you have to pay the operator or you have to pay for the physical space, but not the, you know, there's yeah. just deals
to be made. You got to buy so many meals that right. at some point you could have just rented it.
Exactly. But it seemed like a deal at the time. But also, I do think, you know, LA is hard to sort of break into, but I do think people are really giving and people do really want to support the next generation, and they're hopeful that, like, oh, you'll make a feature and bring it to our house to yeah. to mix or score or whatever. So that was a good thing. And I think it helped having a known-ish actor in the lead. It helped that I had, you know, a bit of credibility from my
non-film career. Your short is completely unlike the things coming from completely unknown entities that are, I mean, you're an established person and you right. have an established lead. I mean, yeah. I'm sure that any house that you brought that sound house
right.
editing would be like, oh, well, this is the real deal. We can,
yeah.
we can help.
No, people
out.
Were really kind about all of that. So that was nice.
Well,
and that
be.
Made me believe that, okay, we did the right, we made the right film that we made. So that was good.
And so once you completed it,
You know, it was like, you know, of course you do the obvious big festival applications, Sundance, Tribeca, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then you realize,
Toronto,
yeah,
yeah.
You realize you want to get into festivals, not just spend money applying to them. And you start branching out a little wider and a little wider. And it was a great, you know, I had experienced the festival thing with so many filmmakers through AFI mm-hmm. and so many films, but not firsthand. It was always like
right.
when they got
like
in.
Students you were mentoring.
Exactly. When they got into things, you cheered them on and promoted them. But you really didn't know, did they apply to one fest or five fests to get into that one? Or what was the story or what was the deal? And I knew a bit of it was going to be a numbers game, just because there are so many festivals out there. And how do you choose what festivals to get into? And it seemed like a surprisingly easy route for us was African American film festivals.
Sure.
Because Harold's the lead. It was sort of like what our first accepts were from African American film festivals. And then, of course, once you start getting into festivals, other programmers begin to take note and stuff
I've
like
heard that.
That,
which is funny, because there's the two people either tell me, "Oh no, I don't want to give away my premiere."
Right.
And then, but a lot of people have told me, "Wow, since one of your festivals showed us or made its official selection, the domino started falling."
Yeah.
Which I'm surprised. I'm always surprised that there's
It seems like the premiere thing kind of has slipped away just because the internet and everything else, everything's so accessible. And I think it was becoming prohibitive and, you know, people would be accepted into a festival and say yes, and then get accepted into a better festival before the first festival actually screened, and then they would drop out of the first festival, and then the first festival would be screwed without a slot.
Yeah. Only happened to me once in six festivals.
Oh, great.
Only once.
Not bad.
And then he had the guts to ask for favors to meet a board member.
Of course.
To which I said, I applaud your moxie. No.
And then I took a chance because I didn't know anyone who had done it. Through Film Freeway, they had some, like, promotion thing. And for $25... your film would be promoted to festivals at the top of their email list or something like that. And I thought, well, that's the application fee to a mid-range or low-end festival. Why not spend that $25 on that promotion and see what comes back? And oddly enough, I probably got 40 to 50, no lie, 40 to 50 emails from festivals either giving me free submission or, like, ridiculously reduced application fees. So that $25 got me a whole bunch of other festivals to get into. And so that really helped as well. Because, I mean, for a small short film to play like 35-plus festivals, I don't know, 37, 38 festivals, is pretty good.
Yeah.
And we won 5 awards.
That's outstanding.
Yeah. And didn't really go broke doing it. I mean, I didn't travel to as many festivals as I may have liked to. But again, it was juggling the job and festivals.
And
also, so many festivals notify you 4 weeks or 3 weeks before the festival, which is hard to then make travel
arrangements. I don't even understand that.
Meaning,
but I hear about that all the time.
Yeah, I don't get it either. Because it's just so hard.
You need, I mean, I think our minimum, we aim for 8 weeks?
Yeah, 6 to 8
just
seems
so that
civilized.
You have time to promote.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know.
So it played the fest, did really well. It'll be going online probably in the next week or 10 days. Amazon and a few other places. Mm-hmm.
Is that through a company or are you doing that
yourself? No, I'm doing it myself.
As you should.
Yeah. And because there's just not a lot of... I mean, Shorts International is kind of interested, and that's great. But I figure at this point it's all non-exclusive, and put it up myself as well, just to get it out there, because people still want to see it, and people still like it. And then I was pushing to try to get the feature made, but getting features made these days is a little hard. And a lot of people suggested, because of the feature script is kind of like four friends managing life in L.A. at this weird time. And so they said, write it as a pilot. Repurpose it as a pilot. And so I've just recently done that.
Really?
And people are really interested in it as a series. So that's kind of great.
Fascinating, which also kind of follows the trend of...
Right.
My God, the public, it scares me. I love binging TV.
My wife does. I'll do it reluctantly with her, but I'm just like, I can watch one episode a night for a week or 3 weeks and I'd be happy.
Yeah.
But like on the same night to watch four in a row, I don't know. My head doesn't work.
But I worry that the new generation of TV series that's like 10 episodes,
right,
whether half hours or 1 hours, that's pushing out the eyeballs that would normally pay attention to film.
I agree.
Independent film.
Right. But I kind of figure it's always just a cycle.
Yeah.
And it'll circle back to features, whether they're studio or independent. And if they're studio, great. And then they'll be independent after that. Or it'll all just rotate around.
Definitely. But you converting a meditation into a series...
Yeah.
Very much plays into how people are more interested than ever in high quality, mature TV right. series. Like you used to write, we used to not be able to get grown-up shows on TV until 10 p.m.
Yeah. No, that's really true.
And now, yeah, they're making more stuff for us than ever.
Yeah. And it does seem like adult features are a little less, are finding a harder time finding their audience.
I guess it's the domination of streaming because 5 years ago, Netflix had tons of indies that I loved sitting through and like they're gone.
Right. Right.
And if they're not going to show something with that appeals to someone over 35.
Yeah.
I don't know what age to cut it off.
You're right.
Yeah. Where do I get to see films if I don't catch it at the Limley?
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, in this way, I've got both. And, you know, if one happens before the other, there's no saying that I'll, you know, not take it. I'd rather make it happen.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And so that's where Meditation Stands do you have Harold in your back pocket for that?
Or? He's been in the back pocket for the feature version, and the pilot television version just really happened like in the past 2 months.
Right.
So he's been working and we haven't.
Yeah, he's on a series right now, I believe.
And haven't had a lot of time to meet and go over it. But ideally, that's the intention.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I would love a show that good.
Yeah, well, I think so, too. And I think that, you know, the show he's on currently is doing really well and he gets a lot of props for it. But again, he's not the lead. And this is a lead in sort of more of a romantic kind of role, which is also something that he's not
doesn't get a chance to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it's still.
Yeah.
There's a lot of prejudice.
Right. So that's all good.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's, are there other scripts that you have in mind? Yeah,
so then.
Because I guess I'll give it away. I just know from Facebook that you finally left AFI after 25 years?
Left AFI after 25 years. It just, I had wanted to leave for a while, like 5 years, a while. And just one of those things of, you know, this job, I want to do other things. But it never seemed practical. Mm-hmm. You always wanted the other thing in hand before you left.
Sure.
And then it just seemed like maybe that's not going to happen. And maybe my need to move on is greater than my need to be practical. So why not take the grand leap? And as terrifying as it is, you know, a year into married life, I'm sure my wife's my wife's parents are really happy that she married a man who quits his job.
She married a man with 25 years at the same place.
Yes, exactly.
And then he's like, and was the main impetus, like, was the experience making a meditation? Did that help push
it
you?
It did, because it sort of showed me that I had put my creative self. Though it was very creative, the job that I was doing at AFI, it wasn't my creative work.
Right.
And it sort of showed me that, no, that's what you have always wanted to do, and you should be doing it. And it's doable. I mean, that's the other thing, is I had wanted to make a short for a while, and it was always just like, well, you need a certain amount of money, you need this, you need that. There was always an excuse not to do it. And after I did it, it was like, we shot in 3 days. I put up half the money. My producer put up the other half the money. It wasn't back-breaking money. It was money that was savable.
Yeah.
And we had a really nice product out of it. So it made me believe that, like, just doing it is doable.
Well, I'll quickly do the math in my head. 16 minutes. So to get to 90, you have to multiply it by about 6.
Right.
So whatever, you made a sixth of your feature.
Right. Yeah.
In 3 days.
Yeah.
In a very manageable way.
Exactly. Exactly. And, I mean, that was part of the intention of making the short, is I knew it would be 2 characters. It wasn't going to be a lot of characters. I knew it would probably be 1 location, a couple of rooms in the same house, so that there wasn't a lot of logistical moves or a logistical production stuff to have to deal with. But that's not saying it couldn't have been a complicated shoot with lots of locations. It still worked out.
You could have driven everyone crazy and moved 3 times every day for 3 days.
Yeah.
Which you didn't need to do.
Right.
I'm just curious. I'll throw it out. I mean, were you tempted to make other shorts out of that feature and sort of piece them together, or is just really just the one?
It crossed my mind. I don't know if the stories within the scenes of the rest of the feature so liken themselves to a film.
Right, they don't stand alone.
Exactly. I mean, you'd have to do some manipulation to make that work. It wasn't like, I could do this five times and boom, have a feature.
Right.
If only.
Which, that would be, that's a bit too perfect.
Right, right. It was all positive, all really good. But now the thing is, now I want to be directing something else, and, you know, I'm getting practical again, thinking, well, not yet, and not this, and not that, but I'll jump.
Well, with all your writing over the last, do you have favorites? Do you have, like, you know, the 5 to 10 that you most want to do next, or are you more focused on taking a meditation and writing a series?
I also, during this time, the time that a meditation was on the festival circuit, I was working with a director on a feature script that I finished and recently won a couple prizes at some screenplay competitions. And so we are really trying to get that feature made.
One,
A Trip to Rome.
A Trip to Rome.
Yeah. So...
So I'll tell you this. It's because it won an award... Yeah. Was it Screenplay Festival or 100 Screenplays?
100 Screenplays.
100 Screenplays, which is a sponsor.
Right.
So I grabbed it. I read the first 5 pages. Cool. I did that thing.
Yeah.
And I was captivated.
Oh, cool.
I think it was the first 5, but I was like, I know Joe. Right. I'm gonna read this. That's a good, I really like how you open that script.
And it's a true story that happened in Colombia.
Really?
About 18 years ago. And the director, who's Colombian, really wanted it reset in the States. And it was about 2 Catholic priests. And I'm just like, you know, Catholics and priests in the States at the moment, it's kind of tough. And they have a different role in our society than they do in Colombia, just because I think there's a more
Catholicism. That's a Catholic country.
Exactly.
This country, Catholics are the liberals.
Yeah. And also, it's like, if we set it in the 60s or 70s, it could be a similar Catholic time. But no, he wanted it contemporary and wanted it here. And we found a way to do it. And it's about 2 priests who are found gangland murdered in a car, shot up. And why and how did that happen? And it turns out they were lovers long term.
So I wasn't going to give that away. I got that out of the first 5, I think. Maybe it was 10.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to throw that out. By the way, I read that and I thought, wow, Joe, because I think a meditation has acts of bravery in it as a creator, as a writer. Yeah. I think you do some very brave things in it. And when I read that in A Trip to Rome, I'm like, I mean, I should have read the whole thing, but I just,
that's
all right. It's time. But I was like, wow, Joe has balls. You know, because I mean, gay priests getting murdered. I mean,
yeah. So I'm sort of trying to focus on getting an agent, a manager, and whether it's, you know, the writing seems to be the logical place to start. But I think it's kind of great to have the directing going and having a sample that I wrote that I also directed as part of the package, I think is a great thing.
See, I told you that was a good one. Besides being a really great filmmaker, Joe Patrica is just an interesting person with a really great history. I mean, how many filmmakers at the festivals also have a 25-year career at the American Film Institute? I'll tell you how many. Just one. Just Joe. Okay, so as I said in the intro, you can go to discoverindiefilm.com right now, go to the post for this podcast, and there will be a link where you can watch a meditation. And while you're at discoverindiefilm.com, you can watch a ton of great short films and get links to great feature films of all the filmmakers who've been interviewed on this podcast. And if you're into social media, @DIFWINS is your handle for Discover Indie Film on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So on my way out, I'll mention, as always, that Film Invasion LA is in June and the Sherman Oaks Film Festival is every November. If you've got something to submit to those, the deadline's pretty much always about 3 months before the festival. And I'm going to thank you for listening.